Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. It's Thursday, January the 31st, and you're listening to KCAW Sitka. I'm Chris Todd with Raven News. If you woke up in the middle of the night, it might have been because of an earthquake. Many Sitkan residents felt some shaking just before 1 o'clock this morning. The West Coast and Alaska Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer reported shortly afterward that there was no tsunami danger. The earthquake's magnitude was estimated between 5.5 and 6.0, with an epicenter about 100 miles northwest of Dixon Entrance. That puts it south of Baranoff Island and west of Craig. Shaking was also felt in other parts of southeast, including Wrangell. Thursday's early morning shaking comes nearly a month after a magnitude 7.5 quake that put most of southeast Alaska under a tsunami warning. In that instance, just before midnight on January 5th, only minimal changes in sea level were reported. At Centennial Hall on Wednesday afternoon, sounds of heavy equipment moving a nearly 50-year-old canoe. The giant wooden canoe is adorned with Native design and has been parked between Centennial Hall and Kettleson Memorial Library for years. It was commissioned in the late 1960s by the Greater Sitka Chamber of Commerce and later carved by George Benson, Herman Kitka, and Andrew Hope. The parking lot around the canoe is being completely redesigned, so yesterday the canoe made the trip across the construction site on a flatbed truck to its temporary home in the Crescent Harbor shelter. It will remain there until the parking lot renovation is complete. You can see a video of the canoe in motion. It's on our website at kcaw.org. One of Southeast's most prominent environmental organizations has started a marketing campaign for timber. The Sitka Conservation Society recently printed a glossy brochure selling the virtues of second-growth Tongass timber for projects from furniture to housing. The only problem is there's no way yet to economically harvest and process second-growth. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
SCS Director Andrew Tomes is the first to admit that an industry based on second growth may be decades away, but he doesn't think it's too early for wood users to consider local products.
As we think long term about where we get our resources, how local we live, the cost of shipping things, and our overall carbon footprint, we need to start looking more locally at where we get our resources, and eventually we're going to have to build the economy and the networks where we're able to buy wood that comes from the region rather than from across the continent.
The brochure that SCS has produced is called Alaskan Grown, a guide to Tongass young growth timber and its uses. It features a pair of recreational log cabins built by the Forest Service in Sitka and Wrangell, a private residence in Gustavus, and a recent project in the Sitka High School wood shop using red alder to build nightstands. None of the wood for these projects was purchased through conventional means, but Tome says there are networks of small-scale mills from Ahuna to Wrangell to Prince of Wales that can be a reasonable alternative for people willing to try something that, for now, remains unconventional.
We've heard anecdotally from some of the builders in town that once they have figured out where they get their supply of local wood, the prices are cheaper or comparable to buying all their wood from that comes from someplace else in the country rather than here.
You know, Alaska young growth is no different than any other tree that grows in North America.
Alan Brackley is the director of the Forest Service's Pacific Northwest Research Station in Sitka.
Be it lumber or pulp and paper or particle board or plywood or engineered products, you can make them out of Alaska young growth.
Brackley says the one limitation on young growth is that it cannot produce sawn clear boards. That is a feature of old growth and why it remains so valuable. Brackley does not view the turn to young growth in the Tongass as especially innovative. Young growth is the name of the game in much of the nation's timber industry.
You go down to Washington and Oregon, they've almost totally converted to a young growth economy. Not only have they converted to a young growth economy, some of the industrial forest lands, they have made the transition from young growth to almost a plantation, highly managed stand type situation.
Roughly 1 million acres of the Tongass was clear-cut during the pulp mill era between 1960 and 1990 and is now in second growth. But the rate of regrowth, despite Southeast's uniform appearance from the air, is really variable. Brackley says a lot of people are working on projecting sustainable yields through time in the Tongass, but time in this forest works on a different scale. Brackley thinks we're 30 to 40 years out from having enough young growth to sustain major industry again.
But right now, there is no possibility that you could support anything other than a very, very small industry.
Brackley says that projection could change with more study. The SDS brochure lays these facts on the line, but Andrew Tomes is undeterred. He says the Sitka Conservation Society just wanted to show agencies and potential users what is possible with young growth and to point the way to a more sustainable economic future for Southeast communities. He hopes many previously clear-cut areas will be set aside and not logged again for young growth, and some wood, like yellow cedar, is just too slow-growing to be a practical young growth product. Tomes is just as deliberate in spreading the word about young growth. You probably won't find a printed copy of this brochure except at the SCS office.
We want to use as little as wood as possible and reduce our amount of paper, and I think that people can read this real well on the internet.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
You can find a copy of the Tongass Young Growth brochure on our website at kcaw.org. Phone scammers are targeting elderly residents in Sitka, Petersburg, and other Southeast communities. The caller typically claims to be a grandchild in dire trouble and in need of money. There are some variations on this theme, but as Matt Lichtenstein reports, the scam has been around for a while.
Petersburg resident Jeannie Norheim says she received one of the scam phone calls this summer.
My call came from supposedly my grandson, who had left down and gone to L.A. for somebody's wedding, is what he said. And he said he had this car that he was driving, and it was a rental, and the airbags blew up in his face, and he's got a broken nose and no teeth, and he could hardly talk decent, and, you know. And so he needed $9,000 to get out of jail and to start, you know, getting some lawyer help.
When Norheim asked why the caller didn't contact his parents, he said he didn't want them to know about it and urged her not to call them. When she said she didn't have the money, he asked to talk to her husband, Roald.
He said, "Well, let me talk to Grandpa." And right then I knew it was not my grandson, because they've never called Roald Grandpa. It's always been Papa. And so right then I knew. I said, "You don't even sound like my grandson." And so I gave the phone to Roland, and he told the same thing. And the guy slammed the phone down in his ear when he told him to go jump in the lake. Anyway, that was our experience.
Norheim says several of her friends got the same phone call. Local police have received reports about the scam but have no leads in the case. They urge residents not to give out personal information and to contact the police department if they get a call like this. There were reports of similar calls to Juneau residents a year ago. Nationwide, the FBI says it's gotten complaints about the so-called grandparent scam since 2008. There are a number of variations. Sometimes the caller pretends to be another relative or a friend of the relative, their attorney, or even an arresting officer or a doctor, but they all prey on a senior's urgent concern for a loved one in trouble. According to Anchorage-based FBI agent Eric Gonzalez, the scammers can be very convincing.
So people just need to be aware of the scam. When you get a call like this, just hang up. If for some reason you may even think it's believable, call a family member to verify it. But 99% of the time, it's going to be a scheme. Just hang up.
In addition to contacting local police, you can report such calls to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. The website also includes a variety of statistics and reports and other information about phone and internet scams. The address is ic3.gov. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
In the legislature, a bill that would increase funding for schools has been introduced. A team of 9 Democrats want to peg what's called the base student allocation to inflation. That allocation gives schools $5,680 for every student they have enrolled, and it's remained at the same level for the past 3 years. The proposed funding bill would increase that amount to nearly $6,000 to account for inflation over the past 2 years, and it would permanently tie the allocation to the Consumer Price Index going forward. Representative Harriet Drummond served on the Anchorage School Board before being elected to the legislature, and she describes the bill as a way of responding to recent staffing cuts in the district.
The school districts have been cutting for years. They've long since cut any fat, if there ever was any to begin with. They're now cutting certified staff.
House Majority Leader Lance Pruitt is skeptical of the bill's potential to get through the legislature. The Anchorage Republican is concerned the bill could give future legislators less flexibility with the budget in times when less revenue is coming in. And he says changes to the education funding formula would probably have more success if the Democratic minority took a bipartisan approach.
The bill that's out there is more of a political statement than truly addressing the issue. If there was really a desire to see this move forward and not just be an opportunity to talk to you guys, then you would probably see some majority members' names on there.
Pruitt says that it's too early to tell whether there will be any increases to education funding, but thinks the governor's plan to keep the base student allocation at the same level is a good starting point. And finally, the annual Sitka Jazz Festival starts today. Free concerts are planned for today and tomorrow, and evening concerts tomorrow and Saturday at the Sitka Performing Arts Center. Each concert starts with the Alaska students performing early in the evening, followed by professional jazz performers. And that's it for Raven News for this hour. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. Stay with us until 8:18 this morning. Tom Scott, composer and saxophonist with the Jazz Festival, will be in. Good morning. Thanks for listening.